been very nice, I guess, filling in for Dr. Rott's class. There's only two more times that the triumvirate that's been covering will be doing it. This is the second last time.
Bezrat Hashem.
No, well, okay, I'm not sure what Dr. Rock's plans are, but I can tell you from our standpoint, it's been very difficult for us, only because logistically and our schedules and stuff like that. So, but it's been a lot of fun.
We appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's been our pleasure. I just want to be as honest as possible. Like, the guys in Yeshiva want to kill me. And when I get there, it already cut into my Ian chair, and then I got to, like, I don't have time to sit down right into Ian chair, and then we move along. I'm okay, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So I figure since I don't belong to Matan, right? So that gives me the luxury of talking whatever I want to talk about, which I find to be very liberating. In the beginning, I figured I was supposed to play more according to the rules, but now I just don't really care. For me, I'm just like, you know what? Listen, I want to do what I love doing. So I'll start off with this. So first of all, it's interesting. Especially in modern orthodoxy, but even in the right wing world too, the world of Torah learning has become more specialized. It's like medicine, right? So it used to be in the old days, you had two kinds of doctors, right? Diagnosticians and surgeons. Actually, before that, you had one kind of doctor, the guy who did everything, right? Then it's split up to diagnosticians and surgeons, and then it's gotten more specialized to the point where, for example, my brother-in-law is a pediatric cardiothoracic surgeon, so he's got like his dalat amos are about that big, right? And then, of course, if anything remotely is out of that area, he's going to refer to someone else. It's interesting that the world of Torah learning has become that way also. You have, like, these experts in these fields, like an expert in electricity and halacha, which is interesting. It's an odd development. The Rambam, the Rishonim were not like that. They knew everything about everything. Today, it's a little bit different. So what's interesting about learning Gemara is that the Bris Kederach, which became very popular in the yeshivas in Europe, has also been relegated to a specialty. I'm only 43, or it depends how you look at that. Sometimes I feel like, but way beyond 43. But it is interesting to see that teaching the Bris Kederach in Gemara has really become more of a specialty. I feel more like a dinosaur every day that goes on. But at the same time, and certainly in, I'd say, the non-yeshiva world, it's very rare. And certainly in the non-yeshiva women's learning world, it's almost unheard of. Okay, it is almost unheard of young women in high school to be exposed to the Bris Kederach. The Bris Kederach is still employed in many yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael as the premier method of learning Gemara. Certainly in places like Yeshiva University, many of the Rabbanim there are well versed in the Bris Kederach and teach it. That comes really from Rav Soloveitchik. I know, what's the sign that you're spending a year in gap year in Israel in seminary? When you hear people quoting Halachic Man by the Rav. I've read Halachic Man many times. I really have very little idea what he was talking about, but everyone seems to know what he was talking about. So when anyone likes quoting the line, homo religiosus or, Adam 1, but I really don't believe an 18-year-old could possibly comprehend that, and yet it's become so popular. But the Rav spent most of his life learning Gemara and teaching it, specifically the Bris Kederach. That was his specialty. And in many ways, the shame of it is that as time goes on and it's not being done as often, a lot of the beauty of learning Gemara, in my opinion, is disappearing. I get consulted constantly by people who, like, their kids are in high school, both here and in America, and they sit during Gemara and they're like, what am I doing here? It's boring. It's irrelevant, right? What's the point of all this? Who cares what these older guys had to say? They're talking about issues that have no relevance to us whatsoever. And it's a real shame because I find learning Gemara to be the most creative and liberating type of learning possible. And you can take any, and it's not a competition. You can take any type of learning and put it on the table, and I would argue that the Bris Kederach has more to offer. And I'll show you why. And it's also something that takes years and years to work on and master. I do feel that it takes a part of creativity that, in my opinion, has been disappearing a lot. One thing that's cool about the internet is that since information is so connected to each other, you can go ahead and find a Dvar Torah on almost everything. And a lot of times, it's almost like people regurgitate at the same points. In my more cynical days, and I'm a cynic, so this is coming from a cynic. In my more cynical days, when I go to a drush in the shul, my goal will be to figure out the moral message within 5 minutes, right? Drush starts, it usually ends up being like, be nice to other people, give lots of charity, right? I mean, do good, right? All these like generic, types of things. And I used to think to myself, but okay, so now it's a question of how well you manipulate the words in the Torah. This word means this. And that derives some sort of midah about being good to other people. But of course, if you turn on if you turn on any evangelical on a Sunday, they do the same thing, right? Just take out Jesus and replace it with Moshe or God, and you kind of come to the same message. There's also been a huge uptick and again, it's not a question of good or bad. It's just a huge uptick insofar as analysis of Gemara itself rather than learning Gemara. Or as I put it, analysis of Talmud versus learning Gemara. And those are two very different disciplines, okay? The learning of Talmud or studying of Talmud is taking it as like the same way like an art historian or an art critic would evaluate a painting, okay? That's more like, well, okay, let's look at the painting and we can start about all the externals that have to do with the painting. What time they lived in, right? What kind of paint they used, how many times they were married, okay? Or like, for instance, if you take Da Vinci, I read a great, Isaacson was a great biographer, wrote a biography recently about Da Vinci, and a lot of issues made about the fact that he was a homosexual and then what kind of effect it had on his art. But that has nothing to do with appreciating the art itself. I'm terrible when it comes to appreciating art. When I was on my honeymoon, we were in Italy, went to the Uffizi, and I didn't get it. My wife didn't, but I didn't. I was trying to appreciate art. I took art when I was in Colombia. I tried my best. I used to argue with my teacher quite often because I would say like, well, if this painting means a certain thing to me, is that a good shot? And she'd say no. And I'm like, but isn't that against the nature of art? Isn't art what I want to make out of it? If I look at a Rembrandt and I say, this is what it means. But quite often I find that Gemara, especially modern orthodoxy, you don't find this in the yeshivish world. In modern orthodoxy, Gemara has become sort of like, it's the study of it. Meaning, let's look at everything other than what's actually taking place in the Gemara. What was taking place in Bavel at that period of time, external influences, things of that nature. What?
The context.
Context, right. That has value, right? But I would argue as a secondary value. And I'll give you an analogy, one other analogy, and then I'll just, that's why it's amazing, right? So few sources today. And yet this right here, if I did it in my shiur, this is about 7 hours of Gemara, okay? And then when I tell you how much preparation time is involved in learning Brisker Gemara, Rav Chaim famously said, Rav Chaim was considered the inventor of the Brisker Derech. He said, what's the difference between his Derech and any other Derech in teaching? He says, in any other Derech teaching, it takes 1 hour to prepare 23 hours of lecture. He says, for his shiur, it takes 23 hours of preparation, 1 hour of shiur. This is the hardest, most analytical thing to prepare. Richard Feynman, who is one of my favorite physicists of the 20th century, who was such a genius, interesting guy, was born and raised in Farakaway, had a certain appreciation for, he was Jewish, certain appreciation for Orthodox Jews. So in his introductory lectures to Caltech freshmen who were going to physics, so he used to talk about his view of the other sciences. If you ever talk to a physicist, most physicists have complete disdain for which area of, we'll call it social science, psychology. Wow, do they not like it. Why?
Because it's formulated.
Right. What?
Non-measurable,
very, yet there are studies on it, but especially in the era of Freud, in those days, like for instance, like in the 30s, where Freud was so popular, right? Problem is that, you know, he did like 30 cases and bam, he solved hysteria, you know, created the Oedipal complex, all these other things. So psychology was very down there on the list for Feynman. But it's interesting, Feynman was also very biased towards physics. And the reason why is because he would say biology is good, okay? Biology uses a part of the mind that requires a lot of memorizing and regurgitation, right? Chemistry is great. Chemistry requires mathematics as well. But physics, what's so great about physics? Physics is uncovering the universe itself. Nothing in the universe can operate without physics, okay? Nothing. Biology is based on physics. Chemistry is based on physics. Physics is the underpinning of everything, and you can see the structure of the universe through the lens of physics. That's one reason why I love physics so much. It's amazing what you can see about the universe. Brisker Gemara is the same way. Okay, what Brisker Gemara does so wonderfully well is that it allows us to elevate halacha from ceremony to something meaningful. And when I say meaningful, I don't mean mystically meaningful. Mystically meaningful is another approach. That's every mitzvah I do has a spiritual effect. That's very nice, but I would argue that that's not an abstract, well-thought-out system. It's more like, okay, well, if I just attach the word spirituality to every action, bam, it changes it. I prefer something in here that clicks, and I say, oh, now I see why this halacha was set up a certain way, what the underpinnings are, the conceptual framework for such a thing. And then it takes what these guys are doing in this Gemara to a whole different level. I can just speak from my again, this is the way I had the, I don't know if you call it luck, depends who you're talking to. Others who don't like the Brisker Derech would say tragedy. But my Rebbe in high school was a Talmud Rav. I was even more cynical and skeptical back then. And he introduced us in ninth grade to this way of learning. And that was it. It was like a love affair with this Derech learning Gemara. And I've tried other paths, so to speak, and it's never been as remotely satisfying.
Can you explain?
That's exactly what we're going to do. Okay. I was waiting for someone to say,
the only
what
one
the heck?
Know what
no.
No,
right.
Most people.
Right. You see, it's like I'm using this word like, and it's my love affair with X, whatever X is, 100%. So I was waiting for someone to ask, like, what are you talking about, right?
Well, the question is going to be, how different is this one from the others?
Oh, okay. So
I thought that was the point of the shoe. Yeah.
So what we're going to do is, no, perfect. Before I get into what I want to do, I just want to make, has anyone here ever, you know, heard shiurim or been exposed to this way of learning?
I wouldn't even know.
Where to begin?
When I learned Gemara, if that was the brisk or derech.
Okay, good.
For those who even learn Gemara.
Right, for those, right. Well, and that's the other thing also. I'm a big proponent of the idea that Baruch Hashem, that more women are learning Gemara today. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. So, in my opinion, this type of derech should be introduced into more and more seminaries and more programs as a method of really showing why Gemara is so wonderful. Because like I said, in yeshivas, right, this is considered the premier. This is considered the highest level of learning Gemara, without question. Okay? If you look at the stories in Europe, the guys who were in the Mir or any other yeshiva in Europe would fight for that one or two spots that would open up in Brisk to have the opportunity to sit in Reb Chaim's chair. And Reb Chaim's Talmidim are out of this world. And let's look today. Let's look at Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Okay? Again, many people know him as a philosopher, but he gave Gemara shiur every day. And his Gemara shiurim are extremely abstract. And the beauty of them is insofar as getting into the minds of the Gemara, of the authors of the Gemara, of the Tanaim and the Marayim, and reconstructing what they had to say. I would also argue one last point, and then I'll show you, rather than explain to you what it is, we'll experience it. Okay? I really do believe, and I said this in the beginning, that the amount of creativity required in this area, I can't see, in my opinion, can't see anything comparable. And again, my cynicism, to me, if I could find the answer to a shiur on Google, so that already turns me off. Okay, if I could just do research on Google, you know, in this era where so much information in the academic world is online, if I can go ahead and just Google a topic and get all the research from the internet, well, then what have I really accomplished? I mean, right? It can't just be, in my opinion, it can't just be about rearranging pieces in the puzzle. There has to be some creativity that the area allows us to explore. All right, so we're going to use three examples, okay? And I will tell you that there's some people who love this way of learning, and there's some people who say, not a chance, not for me, which is fine, okay? We go to Baskin-Robbins. I like chocolate chip cookie dough. You may like strawberry sorbet, and that's perfectly fine. We can definitely coexist, even though I don't even think sorbet is ice cream, but that's a different discussion. All right, okay. So let's look at this first Gemara here, okay? So I like, this is more about us together. The key to the brisk derech is it's not about someone lecturing. It's about working together to solve a problem. Literally. I mean, it's literally about identifying the questions, right, and trying to come up with possibilities. Everything we're talking about, you can't Google this. There is no answer. Okay, there is no answer to this. This is not mathematics. This is, in a sense, discovery. And really has to click in your mind for it to work. If it doesn't make sense to you, that's fine. That means it's not the correct answer as far as you're concerned. And this derech allows for a lot of flexibility insofar as what the answer is. Okay? We're going to start off with something that has zero practical applicability. Okay? Zero. In my opinion, part of what the Gemara is, unfortunately today, and as I've said many times in Shirim I Give, Judaism has become manualized. Everyone just cares about what to do. We kind of lose the sense of why we're doing things from a conceptual standpoint. Therefore, the first Masechta listed here, which is Masechta Zvachim, right, is really not taught ever. Last year, I taught the second parak be'ian using the brisk derech in my shiur, and that's like almost unheard of in yeshivas to teach it because there's no practical consequences of zvachim. What does zvachim teach about? What does zvachim teach about? Korbanot, okay, korbanot, right? And actually, to be fair, there's two main masechtas: is zvachim and menachos, right? Menachos is one type of korban. Zvachim is like is the beginning of learning about korbanos, okay? What's so cool about Zvachim, okay, is not just the fact there's no practical effect today, right? But there's very few commentaries on it, okay? See, you don't have, like, legions of Svarim to turn to. If you take up the issue of picking or Sukkah, okay, not only will you have on the Daf, your Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, you have the Rif, who's in the back, the Ran, I'm just going to start shooting out names. The Ramban, the Ritva, the Rashba, those are Rishonim, Tachronim, everyone lines up to the Mishnah Berurah to have a say in Sukkah. Why? Practical. But in Zvachim, you're on an island. All you have with you is, on your right holster, you have Rashi, and occasionally, in your left holster, you have Tosfos. And that's it. It's just you and the Gemara, which is so cool. It's so much more fun, in my opinion, to take up the issue as is, in its most natural form, and not worry about what other people have to say. Just see it for what it is. Okay? Okay. So we're going to enter now into a very simple, what's called thought problem. And this is the best, I've experimented with this before, and to me, it's like the best introduction to the Brisket Derech. In my opinion, but it seems to work really well with groups insofar as, yes, this is a different way of looking at Gemara, okay? All you have to know is as follows, okay? There's only basically 1.5 pieces of information you have to know, okay? We know a Kohen, which I'm a Kohen, okay? A Kohen had to wear special garments to work in the temple, okay? So far, so good. In Parshas Tetzaveh, which is coming up soon, the various garments that were made for the Kohen are listed. The Kohen Hedjo, the average Kohen who did Avoda, wore 4. Kohen Gadol wore 8. So far, so good? Okay. There's something called a chatzitza. Okay? Now, I imagine most women are familiar with what a chatzitza is. Most men usually are not. What's a chatzitza? Or a chatzitza for those who like Ivrit?
For the mikveh, anything that's on your skin.
Good. Between okay.
Between you and the water.
Good. Okay. So chatzitza means that which is between me, separation. A barrier, separation. Good. Anything between me and the water. Okay? Okay. There's a special halacha from the Torah. The Torah says, yilbash al bisaro. That means the clothing has to be on... Okay, now if you're a Karaite, okay, you would... al bisaro, on your skin. Oh. It has to be worn on your skin. If you're a Karaite, how would you learn that to mean? What would the Kohanim have to wear?
No one to
wear. Well, more than that. More than that. They have to wear like spandex, right? I went...
Like
right, right. That's a literal translation. Yilbash al bisaro sounds like it's got to be like this, right? I went road cycling Moshe Shabbos. It was really cold. So I have a... I showed it to my boys so they could make fun of me. Like one of these like spandex biking outfits, right? It's not flattering in any way, but it's good to, when it's cold outside, it's great. But that can't be, because we know they didn't have spandex back then. So what Chazal learned out, okay, is they learned out, what does it mean, yilbash al bisaro? You can't have a chatzitza. So if a Kohen, let's say, cut his arm over here, okay, and now he puts on his shirt, and we'll just call the shirt for now, okay, that will be, and he put a Band-Aid over the cut, that's a chatzitza, okay? Again, it doesn't have to touch a shirt. It merely means that now there's something between it, okay? So again, we've already made one tiny abstract step. If you're a literalist, you'd say, well, it means literally it has to touch my skin, okay?
Every
part of it, which would be absurd, right? So we understand in a very simple abstract concept, it doesn't actually mean again, by mikvah, it's more physical. In other words, the water and the actual skin have to be touching. Here, it's not that the shirt... right, is touching the skin. It merely means there can't be something between my skin and the shirt. Okay? Subtle but very important difference.
So wait, they were supposed to dunk with the clothing?
Oh, no, forget the mikvah. No, no. I'm saying when they did a vote on the mikdash, okay. They wore clothing and they couldn't have like a Band-Aid between the shirt and the arm.
Fine.
Okay?
All right.
Okay. By the way, they wore boxers, just to let you know. Mikhnasayim were like, if you ever see the pictures of them, they're like, it's linen boxers. Begadim. Yeah. Looks so comfortable, so... I'm thinking about reconstructing for myself, which looks really... Okay, anyway. Okay, so now look at this case. Okay, so I'm going to read, but it's like the easiest thing. It's literally one sentence, and we're going to take a step back and say, what should we ask on this? Okay, by Rava. So Rava comes along and asks a question. Nichnasa la ruach bevigda. Okay, all right. So let's create a humorous scenario, okay? So let's say we're in the, I did this by the first, do you remember this?
Not really.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Right, okay, good. So let's say we're in the, I'm working in the temple, okay, and I got my clothes on, okay, and someone with a sense of humor comes in and brings a large industrial-sized fan, okay, and turns the fan on, because it's hot in the base of Mikdash, it's hot, okay? Fan's blowing, winds, okay, and now what's happening? Wind is getting in between.
The skin and the shirt.
Good. So then the Gemara says, mahu, okay, now mahu is, translation of mahu is? Right, but the better translation, context. Mahu means like this. She says, what is this? Literally, that's what it means. But mahu here means two logical possibilities, okay? There are two logical possibilities, and as you'll see, there's no answer the Gemara offers, which means we're left on our own to understand these two logical possibilities, okay? So whatever anchor you're used to, get rid of it. Let yourself go. Two logical possibilities. First possibility, al bisaro ba'inan. The Torah says, yilbash al bisaro. What does yilbash al bisaro mean? We said there can't be any chatzitza, right? So therefore, the ha'aleka, the wind is a chatzitza now. The ha'aleka, ha'aleka means and now it's not, meaning that I'm supposed to have no barrier between my skin and the shirt. And now what do I say? There's a barrier. I'm violating the Torah precept of yilbash al bisaro. That face is perfect, okay? O Dilma, or what's the other possibility? Derech Levisha Bekaf. Let's look at what all of us are wearing. In every garment we're wearing right now, there is some part of that garment where there is
air,
where there's something, it's not touching every part of my skin, right? Derech Levisha Bekaf. What do you mean? That's a clothes are worn. Okay. Now, we have two options in front of us.
What's the translation?
Literally, that Dilma, maybe, right? Okay. Derech, the way Levisha, like wearing,
no,
Bekaf is how.
The way clothing is worn.
It is the way clothing is worn. Meaning we have two logical possibilities. If do you say the wind is a chatzitza, that somehow it's causing like a separation between the skin and my clothing? Or do you say, no, derech levisha bekaf, that's our clothes are worn. If you look at every garment we wear, there's always space between the garment and the skin, right?
And it's not that you have two possibilities. You have two opposite possibilities.
Even worse.
Opposing.
Right.
It's not like they're even close.
You're at this point, oh, I couldn't put it better myself. At this point, you have two possibilities that are completely far apart in the spectrum. Right? They're on the opposite ends of the spectrum. What do we do with something like this? So now you have two possibilities in front of you. You can go on to the next line of Gemara.
But a chatzitza is only an object.
Okay.
Or not. Wind is not considered.
See, so look what's starting to happen now. Right. Now you're starting to ask yourself, like, you're good. You're saying, Ginsburg, slow down for a second. There's something very odd about this, right?
Why even ask the question?
Okay, let's assume, but they did. You're saying it's so obvious that what? That. Okay, good. So usually what happens when we see these situations in our minds always jump to, especially when it's presented as an extreme. The Gemara is very subtle. It presents extremes for a reason. Because your mind always jumps to one of the two. And it becomes like obvious to you, right? It's obvious to say that.
This is the way clothing is worn.
Right.
B.
Right. Option B. Okay. Okay.
Right. But there has to be logic behind option
good.
A, however it wouldn't be there.
Good. Backing ourselves into a corner, you don't want to checkmate yourself. Because once you do, then it makes the first side seem absurd.
Impressive.
Right.
But I'm connecting to what Marcy said, because Rava asked this question.
Right. At this point in time, right, we've consulted no commentaries. We merely used our minds to say, let's analyze wind. And in fact, I would say the way I frame the question is, it's again, taking everything we said and putting it into very, and this is the ultimate end of the Brisk Haderech, it's to put things in categorical terms. Now let's take what we've all said and put it in precise, specific terms. Frame the question as follows. There are two logical ways you could look at wind. And we do this all the time, okay? One logical way to look at wind is it's simply more air, okay? Substance. Look at the substance. Is there any difference in the substance between wind and air? No. Now, some smart Alex, especially young men, would say
more air,
there's more.
Stronger air.
Oh, okay.
Stronger.
But stronger, right. That's like, but we don't deal with molecules, okay?
They'll say,
what do you mean? There's molecules. There's more molecules. Yeah. That's like a physics thing. Yeah. No, but when you're saying...
molecules, wouldn't they just be moving faster?
Yes, but the point is that we don't care about molecules per se. It's irrelevant.
Okay. But I said stronger.
That's right. That's correct. What you're both saying is exactly correct. Because there's another way to evaluate wind, which is based on its effect. Okay? If you think about it, why do we differentiate wind? Right now, there's wind outside. Right, they're blowing. We say billowing. Why? Because we also look at wind insofar as the effect it produces. How do we know that's true? Because we call it wind. You don't call it moving air.
It's like a windchill.
Right, exactly. So you see we relate to it in a qualitatively different way. So think about it. In the way you look at the world, there's two ways you can identify wind. You can identify wind based on substance, then it's more air. Derech levisha bekach. Or you can identify based on the effect it produces, like the term we use, billowing, air that billows, right? That's wind. And that's what there's no right answer in this Gemara. There's no right answer because these are two. There's psak, okay. There's psak. That's different. Now we have to turn to something. Yeah, that's external. That's like, okay, you know what? Take it to the Sanhedrin. We'll vote on it. Who votes in favor of A, B? Bam, votes in, and that's how we paskin. But that doesn't take away from these being two completely equal logical possibilities. You cannot show me in any. You cannot Google this. You can't show me in any demonstrable way why one opinion makes more sense than the other. And I will tell you, in every machlokas in the Gemara, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, Abaye Rava, it always comes out this way. The challenge is to move away from that first inclination of, that doesn't make any sense, right? The other, you know, the side, like this side here.
But to give legitimacy to both.
Exactly. Once you get to that point and see them as two logical possibilities, that's the beauty of it. And I'll show you how that plays a role in practical halacha. Right now, I just want to show you in a purely theoretical sense. Because I don't think.
I just brought another thing.
Okay.
Let's say that
there's a difference between a scientist and a philosopher. Okay. This, what we're doing right now is science. In the sense of, we're taking the facts in front of us and just hypothesizing based on that information itself, going one or two steps beyond the facts. philosophers speculate, okay? What you would suggest is really speculation. That's like saying, well, I mean, again, think about how far you could take speculation. Mm-hmm. Ruach, intellectual free association. Wind reminds me of when I was a child running through the forest. Forests remind me of green. Green reminds me of life. Life reminds me of God, right? That's speculation, meaning that you can really say whatever you want. Right. You notice, at the end of the day, I don't think anyone here would disagree, and don't be convinced by my tone. I think that's a fallacy, right? I think everybody would agree that those are the two ways you could really identify wind in a practical sense. But I think if someone came along and said, you know, what do you call it? Oh, Nichza Ruch Vigdo could mean what you're saying, like A, B, C, D, F, G, D, all the way to Z. I could also come up with an alternative theory as well. That would be just as justifiable. So then where do we stand? You know what I mean? That's the part that's a little bit different.
My question is more based on, is the idea behind Gemara like lachfor or to get to something?
Both. Like, it's both. It's first you dig, right? First you dig.
I'm not
talking about
dig. Oh, like, damn. Like chafira, like
Oh, no.
Or like to go somewhere.
Right. It is to get somewhere. It's ultimately to get somewhere, but first you have to go. There's like this. Imagine you have a system of laws. That's why I love physics. You see things work in a system, right? I'll give you the best example, okay? Another one I like to use, okay? People love going to Disney, right? Right? Disney World?
Yeah.
Does anyone not like going to Disney World? Okay.
Never been.
Really? Okay. Okay, but a Disney World like place, okay? All right. How many people have taken the behind the scenes Disney tour? Okay? Okay. Why? Because I'm more interested in how everything works. The experience is the easy part. Going to me, yeah, I can go on Space Mountain and enjoy it. And it's a lot of fun, don't get me wrong. But I like to see how the thing works. This is what's happening here is you're getting underneath the halacha. Imagine we know how halacha works, okay? You know, let's give an example. Like, you know, kashrus, you know what you're supposed to do. I can't mix milk and meat, which is one of the sugars I want to do. I can't mix milk and meat, okay? But do you actually understand how it works, or do you just do what you're told to do? There's a big difference between the two. And when I say know how it works, I don't mean I know all the halachas. That's easy. Again, there's a million svarim I could pick up right now and have a laundry list of what I'm supposed to do. But do you really understand how it works? What led Chazal down here? What created it?
Okay, okay? So why don't we work backwards? We know that the Kohanim did not wear spandex.
Okay.
And because they didn't wear spandex, obviously, wind is not a chatzitza.
No, but that would be, okay, you mean why?
Because they didn't have spandex.
But, I know. Factually, it's true. It's impossible they had spandex, right? But with
saying they were wearing tzamud clothing. So if they're right. Wearing tzamud clothing, that means wind is...
Fairly tzamud. It wasn't that tight. It had to be... They had a tailor in the Beis Hamikdash who, just an example...
It answers the question based on what they in reality
right. So the Gemara has seven of these cases, okay? I think the fifth one is what about the armpit? Meaning... The armpit, the question is, what if the armpit touches the skin? Does the armpit have to touch the skin or not? Right? And the Gemara says, no, you won't be able to move your garments if it touched the skin. So the Gemara does flesh out that possibility. This is one of actual seven getting into how chatzitza works. But my point, though, is that ultimately, all this tells us, it's irrelevant what to do. What they're trying to show you is that when it comes to what a chatzitza is, you could see chatzitza operating in two realms. You could see chatzitza based on substance, right? And then, if it's based on substance, well, of course, something foreign. See, that's the key thing. Something foreign, of course, is a chatzitza. But can you see wind as a foreign substance? You could. You could see it as a foreign substance. You could say, what's it doing? It's preventing the shirt, right, from being worn properly. It's billowing. Or as you would say, right, exactly. It's not samud anymore. Or you could say, no, what do you mean it's not samud? It's just more air. So how can you ever put in the context of samud? Right? So you see, there's definitely a halachic byproduct of this, okay? Let's do the next case, okay? And now, I'll, just to be fair, let's bring it into practical halacha, okay? But you'll see this is also the kind of Gemara, in my opinion, like the first time I did this Gemara, like when I forgot how old it was, I was like, what? Let's see if you have the same reaction. Look at source number two, okay? Okay, little background, okay? I know, so let's just get this out of the way. I has anyone here ever gotten an aliyah to the Torah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes? Good. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so... I'm happy you said that because now I can put you on the spot. Okay.
It was a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
You get called up. Now what? Go slow. I don't. You walk up to the bima. You're in front of the Torah. Now what?
Okay. There are brachot that
Let's pretend you make the. Oh, forget even the brachot. Okay. What's the first thing you would do?
Hold the yad and kiss the yad of the place where they're reading.
Okay. Next.
It was a few years ago.
It's okay.
Right here. You say something.
Okay.
And then you go to the side and you stand there while they read the keta, and then you say something. You kiss again, and then you say something again afterwards.
Okay. Was the Torah open the entire time?
No.
Was it? And open it and close it. Okay. Okay. So far, so good? Okay.
I don't know. I feel like...
It's okay. One of the most... You pass with flying colors, okay? One of the most fascinating things in halacha that I find is that when you have areas in halacha where everyone gets to, in a sense, put their own personal stamp on the practice, it's just very odd. There are some areas in halacha that lend themselves to that. Like, for instance, karpas, right? We're not really sure what karpas is, so... you know, you can pick different types of vegetables, but sometimes it's really odd why, for whatever reason, people decide on their own to put their own personal stamp of halacha. The best example is getting an aliyah. If you ever watch men get an aliyah, everyone has their own little shtick, okay? One guy will get up there and he'll open the Sefer Torah on his own, right? Another one will open and close it. Another one will lift it up. Another one won't lift it up. Another one will kiss with that thing, kiss with the tzitzis, take the tzitzis and mark over all the areas. There's like, I'm telling you, there's like 30 to 40 different overall methods that people do, which is so strange. How did this happen, right? Don't we say Torah Achas? And it's so funny because even Eretz Yisrael, even Eretz Yisrael, where we want to feel like we're not in Gullus anymore, Torah Achas U'Mishpat Echad. What that means is that at some point, halavai, the Torah is supposed to be unified. It isn't supposed to be where I go up there and do my own thing and you go up there and do your own thing. It's supposed to be one system for all. One system that we all do the same. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about making kiddush standing up, sitting down.
Right, isn't it so odd? Yeah. Right. And it's just the weirdest thing.
And they're all great yidnim.
Right. Okay. So you don't like that?
I don't agree with what you said about one Torah for all. Whatever. I mean, we're supposed to have our differences within the unity of our people. That's what makes us, I think, so beautiful.
So okay, but remember, in those drushes they always give. At Sinai, what do we say? Na'aseh v'nishma. That means we're unified. No?
What? You can be unified in your differences.
But okay, let me put it a different way. Let's say psak, okay? I don't mean philosophy. Philosophy allows for so much flexibility. I'm talking about psak, okay? Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, have a machlokas, right? We know one of them had to be, so to speak, in a metaphysical sense, correct. It's impossible that both could be correct in psak. It has to be.
No. Right? 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours,
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get to 1 hour, 3 hours. That's not halacha. That's minog. Okay. I'm talking about halacha.
So why are all these things, lifting, touching, the halacha is you make a bracha or what, I don't know, whatever.
Good, okay, good. Halacha. So what, perfect. So the first thing, one thing that's so important about learning Gemara, forget the brisket Derech, is you see halacha in its pristine form without all these additional things.
Pure.
It's the pure. It's the ice cream without the toppings. You understand? So it's and today you're just proving my point. We've become so conditioned to not to differentiate well between what is actually not halacha, i.e., minog, and what is the actual halacha. And you'll see just from reading from the Torah, this pit in the Gemara, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, it happens all the time. Kiddush, sitting, standing. The Gemara doesn't cite any of those things, by the way. All those things are things that we picked up over time. But I'm not sure if in a messianic world, we're going to want, like, anyone here, Yeki? Yeah, you're on the way out. You know, I don't know if we're going to want Yekis. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to have... Baruch Hashem. It's unclear. By the way, there are Rabbanim in Israel who, I don't know if you want to call it idealized, naive, or utopian, depending on which equivocation you want to focus on, who really believe that they want to get rid of Ashkenaz and Sfarad and say there should be Minhag Eretz Yisrael. I like that. I think that's great. It would be much better if there's a unified system of halacha. Forget personal, forget family practice.
Kidney oats or without kidney
oats? Of course it's without kidney oats.
Good
stuff. I give a shiur every year on kidney oats. And like, you know how I know it's a good shiur? Because no one's happy. Yeah. Right? No one's happy. Not too machmir, not too mako. Perfect. Just right. Goldilocks.
We have
right.
Every year.
Right. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing how 7 days of your life.
I know, it's 7 days. But I just
have to
say something in parentheses. You can stop that.
Oh, no. Okay. In source number two, it's a Gemara Megillah. And again, this is, look how short, we're talking about two lines of Gemara. Okay. Tanur Banan. Okay. You get called off for an aliyah. Now, another thing, which halavai, we return back into normal halakhic practice. when you leaned, when you got called up to read from the Torah, I already gave it away, right? You actually read, okay? And that's the way it should be done. And the truth is, really should be done that way. It's the idea, you shouldn't have a, I'm a Bakore, okay? I'm a leaning since 14. I'm semi-retired now because it's just, it's not that it takes me 20 minutes to look over a parsha, but I get very tired after leaning, so I kind of, you know, don't do it as much. But I would love for the day where everyone knew enough basic Torah, to do an Aliyah. I mean, it's really not that big of a deal.
That's what you're supposed to do. You get called up, you say bracha, and you say that.
And then you read your, and by the way, technically you could just read until you want to stop. Okay, so let's do it today. Today, let's say Shabbos, seven Aliyahs. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how you, seven Aliyahs. So I get up there, I read first Aliyah. You need to
just bring them up and like, just, here you go?
Yeah. No, because it's interesting. So in those days, they knew way more Torah Shebichsav than they knew Torah Shebaalpeh. When it came to basic halacha, that was not known. But in schools, what were they learning? Bereishis bara Elokim. You know, so when my kids come home and they, you know, like my daughters learn how to lean, it was beautiful, right? Because they know Torah. It's amazing how like...
It's existing. It's a popular shita.
Well, it's okay. So the Teimanim still do it. Okay.
No, there's schools that are not Teimanim. The school in Neria...
for girls, I mean.
No. In Neria. Yeah. No, I'm saying because it doesn't exist for girls. They learn Torah with laming.
Right.
So when
right.
Like eight,
no, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. I'm saying that because that's how it's a great, it serves two purposes. You know how to lane, and it helps you remember it. Okay. It helps you remember it. What I'm saying is that on Shabbos, if you go to Teimani Shul, okay, you'll see everyone who gets called up for an Aliyah lanes. Okay. Now, there's a downside to that. What's the downside? No. That's one issue for sure.
What?
But if you want...
Right,
that is an issue. No, they also use a miturgaman. I'm not sure how many people here would be satisfied with that, where after you lay in the pasuk once, someone translates it to Aramaic twice, okay?
What?
Right.
Have you ever tried hearing the shir like that?
The shir, Yes, I know. And you don't want to go matos masai. Right. It's very difficult. It's much longer. However, just to counter, it's clear the minhag in Eretz Yisrael was a three-year laning cycle. Think about what they do to Simchas Torah. Another made up poem. What do you call it? It would destroy Simchas Torah. But a three-year cycle means shorter parshiot, much better for a miturgaman. So my vote is three-year cycle, shorter parshiot, and we have a miturgaman in English for English-speaking kihilot, for those who speak French, something in French. So this way, you can't miss what's going on. What?
I said, but not both, because I just went to an opening presentation where somebody said something in Hebrew, and then somebody said it in English, and somebody said it in English.
Right. No, we don't want to. Right. That's too long. I agree. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, you get called up now for the Aliyah, okay? Poseach, okay, you get up there, the Sefer Torah is closed, okay? Poseach, you open it, okay? Viroa, right? And you look. Now, what are you looking for? Where you...
Oh,
good,
is.
Okay? And but that actually is a huge halachic, practical consequence. If you get shown the wrong spot, right, you have to go back and start all over again, okay? So very important to know, to know the right spot. So, poseach, open... Roe, see it. Golel, that means close it, right? Umivarech, okay? So far, so good?
Oh, is the purpose so you know where the spot is?
Well, hold on. Don't cheat ahead yet. Hold on. Okay. Okay, then it says, v'chozer, right? Uposeach v'kore. So what do you do? I get called off from Aliyah, okay? The Sefer Torah is closed. I open it, see the spot, okay? Any mention of kissing, by the way?
No,
okay. Oh, see the spot, right? Close, make the bracha. Open, rock and roll. So far, so good. Divrei Meir.
Yeah, but how could you not kiss it? Come on. You kiss a sitter if it falls on the floor. This is the actual cover.
Right. Yeah, I know. Okay. So now that's one sheet, the Divrei Meir. And I don't see any, there's no problem with this so far. Okay. What's the big deal? Open, see the spot, close. Excuse me, make the bracha. One more time. Open, see the spot, close, make the bracha. Open, read away. Okay. Now listen to this. Rav Yehuda Omer, Poseach Baroah, Mevarach V'Koreh. No. Rav Yehuda says, and this sounds like a classic argument for what purpose? What do? You open it, see it, make the bracha, and read. What's the difference in the debate just factually? One side says it has to be closed for the bracha. The other one says no. Okay. Before looking at going on the Gemara for an explanation, at this point, I'd scratch my head and say, who cares, right? Sounds so...
Like, all of it's like why you close your eyes when you light the candle. again? Like,
No, that's not bad. That's because you wanted to. You don't want to say a bracha and then.
Right, you don't want to start reading before you make the bracha, so you close it so you don't accidentally start reading.
Okay. So I'm gonna put aside the question also about women closing eyes before halakha's neiros. Okay, let's put that to the side also. That's another one that's it's something with everything. So, but look at the Gemara provides a reason. The Gemara is bothered by this. The Gemara says my taima in Aramaic, in Hebrew that means what's the reason? The Gemara says the Rebbe Meir. Why does Rebbe Meir insist that I go ahead and close the Sefer Torah? So automatically the Gemara is biased. It's going to say, think about it. It's more efficient that when the Sefer Torah is open, just to, right, exactly, do one thing. As a Baal Kara, you should know. I'm not getting into halacha l'maisa, but there are people when they get in Aliyah, they close the Sefer Torah. And there's certain partios. All right, two things. Not that this is not that important to know. One thing is that the tikkun, which we learn leaning from, right? So quite often matches the exact Alan Sefer Torah. Sometimes it doesn't, okay? Even more so, when you're leaning partios Balak has no breaks in it, or miketz, okay? So when he closes the Sefer Torah, it takes me an extra 30 seconds sometimes to find that spot again. Okay. So the Gemara says, so why go through the second action of closing the Sefer Torah? Okay. Damar Ulav. Now this is a classic maneuver in Gemara. It's going to use a different case as a proof for this case. Okay, so Ula says as follows. Mimnei ma amru ha-kore b'torah lo yisael miturgaman. Okay. I mentioned before that when leaning is done, the halacha was/is that someone's supposed to be translating it. Okay? Now, a good Baal Kara, what could he do? Okay, what could he do before translating it? He could feed the miturgaman. Okay, he could feed the miturgaman information. Okay, he can't do that. You can't feed them. You can't feed the translator. Like for instance, let's say I'm leaning from the Torah, and then I say to him like, in Aramaic, blah 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 blah. Right?
Why are they translating things to Aramaic?
Because Kriya Satorah is not simply an act of reading. Kriya in halacha usually means learning. So if you don't understand the Hebrew, which it should be understood in the language of the time. We have to lean it in Hebrew in the language it's written in, but we have to maximize and ensure that everyone understands the Torah. Like I said, that's why it should be done in English. We should lean from the Torah and then translate it to English, and in Glenwood for sure, because there are people who don't understand Hebrew well, and you need to understand it's a limud.
But they're not translating it there into Aramaic, are they?
In those days they were.
In those days.
Yes, now, correct. Temanim still do. Okay. Temanim still do. Okay, no one's come along and said we should switch over to English yet. But whatever. Revolutions start very small, right?
Don't go there.
Don't go there. Right? I would insist on an English accent, by the way. It sounds more authoritative. For sure, Americans will put our slang in there. What, to
translate?
I guess so. It's a good question whether the halacha will still apply in Yemos Mashiach. It's a good question. Halavai, if we all understood Hebrew perfectly. And to be clear, by the way, when I say Hebrew, I don't mean modern Hebrew. I mean Lashon HaKodesh. There's a big difference between the two. Okay, big difference. Okay. So the Gemara says, Kadesh lo yomru tirgam kasa v'tara. If I started feeding the translator, right, what he's supposed to say, you're in the audience, and you guys are really in the audience because you got the bleacher seats, okay? What are you going to say? You're going to say, hey, that guy, what's he doing when he's reading from the Torah? What else is in the Torah? The Tirgum. Again, if he starts feeding the Miturgamon what's going on in the Torah, you may come to the conclusion that what he's actually doing is reading from the Torah, Bereshis Bara Elokim, Aramaic, Aramaic, Aramaic. That's what you're going to think. He's reading the Aramaic from the Torah, okay?
Oh.
That would be a problem. Okay? Kadesh lo yomru tirgum kasav v'torah. We don't want people thinking that the tirgum is in the Torah. Okay? We want it to be clear. The lines have to be drawn. Torah, tirgum. If I fed the miturgamon information in the audience, you would say, oh, there's tirgum in the Torah. Okay. Hachanami, so to hear, kadesh lo yomru brachas ksuvim v'torah. Same thing here. If the Sefer Torah is open when I make the brachas, okay. So let's stop for a second. Let me ask you, now again, at this point in time, what should we ask?
Are people morons? They don't know?
Okay, that's a great question, right? That's always a great question. What, like people morons? Right, it's a great question. Okay, that's one good question.
You get someone who really doesn't, and they're coming in for the first time, they're whatever. They don't know.
Okay.
Seven times during the wedding, it's suddenly a bracha?
Right, okay, good.
Say the family bracha.
Okay.
Is it part of the... Whatever you're doing.
Okay, so, hold on to that. Good. Let's do one more line. So now what does Rabbi Yehuda do with this? Remember, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you keep it open the entire time. So this is great. He says, Tirgum ika limitae. You'll make a mistake by Tirgum. Now let's talk about those people you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You'll make that mistake by Tirgum. Brachos lekum limitae. But they won't make a mistake by Brachos, okay? Now, when you read this Gemara, okay, I ask myself the following. I mean, well, in such a debate, how would we resolve such a debate? In the 21st century, how would we resolve this debate?
You could ask people.
Exactly. Take a poll, right? And it's not like they couldn't do that back then. They could have sent their emissaries out and said, listen, go to various local shuls and find out, do people make this mistake, right? Simple solution. If that's true, why does the Gemara record this debate? And it's even worse because Rav Yehuda is saying they don't make the mistake by brachos, and Ramirez says they do make the mistake of brachos. So now, again, we're stuck at a bifurcation. We could just say this is some sort of factual dispute, which could have easily been resolved by polling. But that's no fun. You could say that, though, and then move on to the next line of Gemara. Or we could say there's something going on. Again, let's go underneath the issue. There's some issue they're grappling with, and this machlokas is bringing it out. I'm going to obviously, because of my tone, opt with B, okay? But the question is how? How can we construct? What's the issue here?
I'm well educated, the community will gain, or something to the effect of how likely it is that people will be able to make that differentiation.
Okay, so why don't we isolate specifically here? And someone mentioned brachos, okay? Let's understand, maybe they're getting into the issue of what's the relationship of the bracha to the action, okay? And maybe that's whatever's going to generate this potential distortion might be related to how we view the bracha related to the action, okay?
Can you just give the context here, although you said not to relate to the context in the beginning, but when they were writing this news, what was the idea behind breaking up the kriyah into aliyot that had these repetitive brachot throughout?
Oh, actually, so technically they didn't. The person getting the first aliyah would make the bracha, and then the person at the end would make the final bracha.
So then this whole thing is kind of a moot question.
Correct. But as I'll show you today, it's just as applicable. Not insofar as people making a mistake. That we're not worried about anymore. And I don't even think that was really of course, the potential for someone to make a mistake is always there, but that's not really the issue bothering them. Because to me, you could solve that problem. And this halacha should just naturally cease to exist. And we should say today, we're not worried about it anymore. We're not worried about people making that mistake. But the Gemara doesn't say that.
So the issue that's bothering them is if you do the mitzvah without making the bracha preceding it, somehow.
Well, you have to do the bracha before preceding it, but the question is what?
What's the relationship between the bracha and what you're saying afterwards?
Okay, good. Now we're talking.
Hallel, you say the bracha, but it's part of hallel.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to when you say a bracha and then eat, that's totally separate.
Perfect. Now we're talking. Now we're talking.
You have to have the mitzvah in front of you before you do it. Like when you take a lulu, that's the question of the etrog upside down.
Right.
When you pick it up and make the bracha and you're holding it, and you must do the action straight away. Which you
right. Do.
Okay. But the same thing, you're lighting your candles.
Is part of
you make the bracha and then you light the candles.
Right. If you shook the lulu, which you can't do because then Shabbat is it. I don't know. Maybe that's the question.
Okay, well, so let's use the Gemara gives us the Gemara plays a card. Okay, the card it plays is the case by Ula. Let's just analyze the Meturgamon for a second. Ula's the guy, the dude. Okay, so yeah.
Is the question whether or not the bracha is a part of the reading or not?
Yes, I think.
If you close it, it's separate.
Oh.
But if you leave it open, then
right.
It's part of the mitzvah.
Good. Okay. So let's look at the starting point. Perfect. Let's look at the starting point from Ula and show how that idea emerges.
So why did they close it in the first place?
Hold on. I'll show you. Let's take what Ula says. Ula says, if everyone agrees, if the Baal Kore feeds the Mitur Gaman information, that'll be a problem. Right. Okay, but why? So we know the Mitur Gaman is set up for limud, for the purpose of learning, right? So what's going to happen? In this function of learning, the Mitur Gaman functions as, again, as a secondary element in limud. Primary limud is reading from the Torah. Secondary is Mitur Gaman. Lines have to be clear, okay? Okay. Question is, what's the role of the bracha in Kriyas HaTorah? So one possibility, right, and I'll say the following. Everyone agrees that the bracha is, again, think about it. The Gemara says, poseach, right? You open up the Sefer Torah, right? You see the spot, and then you say the bracha. What does that start telling us about the bracha? It's a little bit different than, let's say,
You already have the action. You're, by opening, then you've begun the action.
Good. So the action of reading Torah actually begins at what point? So the Rav actually held that, and he has a raya from Pasuk and Ezra, the Rav actually held that part of the responsibility of the person getting the Aliyah is to actually do the action of opening the Sefer Torah. So for those people who are, like myself, are briskers, so when I get an Aliyah, right, so quite often the Baal Kore will open up the Sefer Torah for me. And what do? I'll close it and open it. Because opening it is the haskalah. But if that's the beginning of the actual kriya,
the bracha before you opened it.
No. So what's unique about here is that the bracha is actually part of the kriya itself. Okay? It's built into the structure of the kriya. It's not a normal bracha that I say the bracha and it's separate from the action. It's actually, when I say that bracha, the kriya satorah has begun. The limud's begun. What's the bracha? Asher bachar banu mikol amim. That's part of the limud. Okay?
So you don't close it back again.
No. Oh, at the end I do. At the end you have to close it. But in the beginning, no.
I mean, you don't do that second way that you leave
the Gemara does. And in fact, you should know, everyone does except for Tosfos. And that's why I said it's very odd for some reason that people close it. The Pesach, clearly from the Shulchan Aruch, is to keep it open. Okay? Yeah.
What is it, this Shirat HaYam, is that what it's called? Like the first couple of sentences, some people say it's part of the song, and other people say no.
Oh, very good. I think it's the last Pesachim.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it's the last one. It's very good. It's a machlokas between Ibn Ezra and Ramban. It says kiva sus paro. So there's a machlokas. Is that part of the actual shira, right? Or is that actually separate completely? That's right. Yeah, exactly. So now the question is, if you say the bracha has some role to play in the kriya, now we can formulate two logical possibilities. If it's part of, I'm going to start using what's called Briska terminology. If it's part of the chetza, the object of kriya itself, then what do you have to say? What do we do when we make the bracha? Should the Torah be open or closed?
Open.
Okay. Then why would you close it? What's the other side going to say?
Closing it would be to separate it from something else.
Right. So I would say like this.
The reading is separate from the bracha.
Okay. Okay, good. So I'd say like this. I'd say, we want the bracha to be part of the laning. That's what we want. Now there's two possibilities. Okay. The first side who says to close it is going to say like this. It's going to say, well, since it's part of it, okay, so now we don't want someone to think that it's part of the actual
writing.
Right. You understand? It could be part of the conceptual framework of limud, but it can't be part of the writing. Got to keep the Sefer Torah closed. Okay? It doesn't matter if someone's around who might make that mistake. That's not the point. The point is the action can't be one that lends itself to distortion.
Why not just have a separate person saying the bracha and a separate person reading it? Then you solve your problem.
Maybe.
Except for one problem. So today, even though that's what we do today, right?
Yes.
But we don't. Because the halacha is the person getting the aliyah must right, and must read. They have to read along. They're supposed to read along. Quietly.
They read along.
They do.
They do read along.
Oh, read along.
Yeah, read along.
Stay up there, you're saying.
Yeah, well, when you get an aliyah, right?
Stay so, up there and read along.
Right, in other words, we should reenact this. Sefer Torah is open, Baal Korah is on the left.
What?
Yeah, I know, I should keep putting books outside. Should give people binoculars, I know, or a telescope.
It's a bit problematic because there are people who get aliyah who really don't have a good control of Hebrew.
Right, so a lot of Rishonim said, right, you're right, and the Rishonim used to say that's why you really, if you know you're going to get, especially today, if you know, and today you give out these, they give out these cards to the men, you know you're getting an aliyah, you really should look over the aliyah beforehand and know what is about to be said, because you're supposed to read along.
Not
on Shabbos. On Shabbos, they give it out a little earlier.
But also, then he needs to have
I agree. I couldn't agree more. You're right. It's a big problem. It's a big, big question. And there are a lot of people, when they get aliyahs, don't read along with the Baal Korei. And there's a big halachic question about that.
Do they have to read along from the Torah, or could they have a chumash?
From the Torah.
Okay. Because it's happening with many people. You have Chabad all over the place, and they have all kinds of people coming. They are not reading the Torah.
What? No. Maybe. I'm just saying, but the Baal Korei's job is really to be the shaliach, so to speak. He's not, but he can't replace the person getting the aliyah. The person getting the aliyah is supposed to read along. Now, what a lot of people do...
Why is that a given? There's a lot of times where we have a replacement.
Oh, because it's not, because the halacha was set up for the person who got, makes the, think of, let me ask a question. I make a bracha on an apple and you eat it. Mm-hmm. How's that going to work? Mm-hmm. Right? I make a bracha on a lulav and you pick it up. That can't be. I make a bracha on laning, I'm supposed to read. Okay, so that's different because that's a question of being motzi a lot of people. Okay.
But the guy making right. the bracha on the shofar is still the one.
Right. Exactly. He does the action.
No, but he's also he's already done it.
That's a separate question. That's a whole question. If he make a bracha again, that's a good question. Like Megillah also. I think in its purest form, I make the bracha. I do the action. But what I've done is the Baal Korei for years. I'm saying this is like when most Baal Korei do. No. That's very good, but no. What I do is I feed the guy getting the aliyah. In other words, the guy getting the aliyah usually read quietly, and I always pace. I always pace myself. You know what I mean? In fact, one of the hardest things, by the way, is sometimes people get up. This is very frustrating for Bakare. I've had people get an Aliyah get up, and what they do is they read along with me, but much slower or loud. And I'm like, whoa, buddy, I got to be able to focus on leaning here, you know?
I need to ask a question about Please. The process of what you did right now.
Okay.
You took two...
This part. I'm not deifying Chazal. I don't deify them. They were human, okay? For instance, they made... I'm going to use this carefully. They were incorrect, not wrong, but incorrect about many things in science. Because science works as follows. I have information in front of me. Whatever that information is, I come to the most rational conclusion, right? Today, we're convinced that, for instance, relativity, that's the way light cannot travel. Nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. But we all know that the next scientific revolution is a couple hundred years away, and the next great theory will come along. Science works like a snowball. It builds off each other, okay? But it doesn't mean... So they were definitely incorrect about certain things, right? But... When it comes to halacha, right, if we go in saying this is ridiculous, right, well, think about the consequence. I'm going to say this as honest as possible.
One side is ridiculous, so could the other side.
Right, and if they're all ridiculous, right, then why would you adhere to rabbinical law?
Where are we?
Right, where do we stand? And I'm not saying this is, I'm not trying to say it's a fantasy. I'm saying we're stuck. In other words, we want to believe that rabbinical law, and rabbinical law is supposed to be there primarily to protect the Torah system, okay? And we want to believe, and it seems that way, that, imagine I use like a bicycle wheel, like there's the center part, which is the Torah, and then spokes that come naturally out, okay? That's rabbinical law. It comes naturally from the Daraisa. Once we introduce the notion of ridiculousness into rabbinical law, well then, why would we adhere by it? See, that's what I meant before by saying there's ceremony, there's tradition, and then there's halacha. Halacha is different. There's a brilliance behind it. And this is, to me, a good example of point of contention. The bracha is part of the kriya. But now there's two ways you could say something's part of it. You can either say it's part of the entity, then you have to keep it closed. Or you could say, no, it has a secondary role. Meaning, it's what we call in halacha a hechsher lemitzvah. It's part of it. A hachana, exactly. That's still part of it.
Can I explain what that means?
Hachana is like a preparation.
The pre.
It's part of it, but it's there to get you ready, right? So if that's the case, then we can keep the Torah open. Because a person's going to say, oh, I know brachas normally function in such a way. It's a hechsher, it's a hachana for the mitzvah. Two logical possibilities. No need to poll people. You don't need to poll anyone. Just take a step back and say, right, exactly. And then the Gemara has to come along and tell us who we paskin like. Why? Because without telling us that, you would never, this is where you have to say, I don't know what to do right now. We're literally at a crossroads. Both of them make very good sense. Now what do we do? So the Gemara comes along and uses external systems, which is a separate share, of how to determine psak and say we paskin like, Rabbi Yehuda. Not because Rabbi Yehuda was right or made more sense, but we have to choose a path. We have to, okay? Beis Hillel were not nice people, okay? I know we want to believe that. I tell you, they weren't, okay? And Beis Shammai weren't just angry people. Because first of all, Beis Medrash. I don't think it means when you walked into Beis Hillel, to their yeshiva, that you just saw a bunch of people who were just like, you know, so nice to see you today. Would you like some flowers? Versus Beis Shammai, everyone's like, so angry. No. It's a crazy concept. There's no question that a lot of the concepts that come out of each Beis Medrash, so to speak, right, has certain, like, let's say, leanings. But you have to realize, the way I see Gemara, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, when they start off with a question, they're not thinking about, well, I'm nice, so I'm going to be Makel, and now I'm going to fit the system in being Makel. Rather, I'm going to go down a road, and whatever the result is, at the end point, then I put the stamp of Mutter or Usher on it. You understand? That's an unbiased, that's a scientific way of looking at things, unbiased. I go in thinking, you know what, I'm going to walk down a certain path. I don't care if it's Usher or Mutter. I just want to see what makes sense. After something makes sense, then we can figure out Usher or Mutter. But unfortunately, quite often, we tend to think that what happens, and this is where things, when people teach the study of Talmud, they want to say, well, you know, like, I'm being facetious, but like, he had terrible migraines, so that's why that led him to a certain conclusion. Think about the consequence of that. If we're willing to, and I'm not saying that we're unbiased, but if we overplay the hand of bias, well, rabbinical law becomes very, very difficult to understand. I mean, because now just, you know, why do they decide to prohibit X? They were in a bad mood that day, or times, you know, that was the period of time.
That's ridiculous. Like, people think that?
I'm just saying, it's a dangerous road to go down, okay? Now, to be fair, right, and then we'll end off at this point, there are limitations to this as well, okay? Right now, okay, we can walk away from the Gemara. The Gemara tells us how we paskin, okay? The Gemara says you paskin a certain way, okay? But the thing is like this. What people don't like about the Brisker Derech, for example, and there's also famous stories about Rav Chaim, when you went to Rav Chaim or Rabbi X for Shiloh, let's say, I don't know, a fleshik spoon fell into my milk pot, okay? Rav Chaim would start going through the sugya with you. Well, let's see. The Gemara here says this, and this is machlokas. What's the svar on machlokas, etc. 3 hours later, you're like, I still don't have the answer to my question. Whereas normal posek would be like usher, okay? The brisker derech doesn't lend itself to that finalized psak type of thing. And the proof is that briskers in general, the rav was not, I mean, even though he gave psak, he wasn't a posek. If you read a tshuva of Ramosha, you'll see a profound difference in how Ramosha thinks. Who's such a creative person, not using the brisker derech, but insofar as how psak works, it's a different methodology. So if your hope is to use brisker gemara to get to the point of psak, it doesn't quite work that way. The brisker derech is more about, well, now that I see, to me, this, like when I did the sugya, you know what it does to me now? When I get up to get an aliyah, I see exactly the role of the bracha that's playing in the aliyah. I see this idea of it being limud. I see the difference if I kept it open or closed. To me, that changes it. It changes it from simply an action, right, to something that has meaning. And I don't mean what most people think by meaning, which is like a spiritual meaning. There is a spiritual meaning. I mean, I understand what I'm doing. You understand? I understand what I'm doing now. Right. That's a big difference. And I'm telling you, I promise you, in every area that the brisker derech touches, you see this reality come out, okay? But it's not easy, okay? Next time I want to do a little more of a complex one, which is on the issue of how long you wait after eating meat. Someone mentioned that, okay? But you also see another thing, which is that if you look at the Gemara in the halacha in its pure sense, what do you see in this case? All the Gemara says when you get an aliyah is, we'll do what we say today, paskin. We paskin, you open it, look, make the bracha, and read. Is there any mention of, again, kissing with the talis, yad, the gartel? None of those things exist. Picking up the Sefer Torah, not, that came up later on. Around the times of late Rishonim, early Achronim, everyone started imparting their own personal customs. The problem is that, and I've said this many times, that there's a certain point where the minog, right, blurs. Right, overtakes the actual lacha. And if you ask someone, what's more important, kissing the makam of the Sefer Torah, or knowing that we possibly like Rabbi Yehuda to keep the Sefer Torah open, I guarantee they would say it's kissing the Sefer Torah. Even though, not in the Gemara.
So we're okay? Supposed to keep it open.
That's how, yeah, when you get called up for an aliyah, right, well, ideally, right, you should open the Sefer Torah, look at the place, you have to know where the place is, right? Let's say the Baal Korah is there, point the place out, right? Keep it open, right? Say the bracha, and rock and roll.
But why did you say you closed it first?
No. So, okay, because the Rav held, Ezra says that when Ezra opened the Sefer Torah, right, everyone stood up, right? So the Rav wanted to learn out from that you can even argue that the actual opening itself starts the Kriyas HaTorah. Right, the act of opening. See, what the Rav did right there is he took a mundane action of opening, right, and actually said, this is part of the halakhic process of Kriyas HaTorah, okay? But that's a chumrah. I mean, whatever. To me, the most important thing is that Sefer Torah open, right, see the place, make the bracha. That's the halakha. That's the ice cream. Everything else that people do are just toppings. And if you don't like the toppings, don't do them. You know what I mean? I don't put cherries on my ice cream. I don't kiss the Sefer Torah with my talis, okay? You should know as an aside.
Do you have a good analogy?
Sure, I love analogies.
A guy getting up, like a baseball player, getting up to bat.
Okay.
Right. He's got all this kicking.
Right.
Bottom very line good. Is, he's got to
right.
hit the ball. He's got to be standing in the right place
sure.
and hit the ball.
Right, and not only that, he has to know, I love, that's the one sport I happen to enjoy is baseball. He has to know so much about the pitcher. Understand the curvature of the ball, like you know what I mean.
Exactly.
There's so much about 100%.
All that beginning stuff and that. You know,
right. Sure.
All that.
Sure.
Just
right, and we can even go further. By the way, we just.